Welcome to the Chantal Hyde Canada's Dating Coach podcast, where you'll learn to love and be loved. Come understand how powerful you are and share in our common experiences so that we can all grow together. Like Chantal loves to say, let's do this.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Amazing. So okay. I am talking to Diane today. And Diane is what we can call a frequent flyer. She comes to my live streams almost every single time I go live, is a wonderful participant, a kind, gentle presence with a little bit of sass, just like Mama has. So she loves what we're talking about. She's very fully informed about what it is that we do. But Diane has her own special set of skills. She is an energy worker and she works with people to help them heal. So we're going to talk about that today. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
So to start this off, tell us what it is that you do.
So I'm an energy healer. And what I do is I help with the energy healing tools. I help people release and heal anything that is negative, unhelpful, blocked, unwanted, right? So traumatic memories, limiting beliefs, painful emotions, right? Negative emotions. So I come at it from a spiritual perspective that we are spiritual beings having physical experience, having human experiences. And so as a spiritual being, as a piece of the universe or part of the universe, right? We are all of the good things. We are abundance. We are creation. We are love. We are joy. We are stability, all of these things. And the crap that we pick up as human beings can be released because it is just like this physical level stuff that we're experiencing. So because it's not part of who you are, intrinsically, right? Your inner being is not those things. They can release. And energy healing tools are the key to releasing deeply and truly. And it's not about just managing your emotions or making the best of it, right? We can do better than that by actually releasing the traumatic memories or the things that happen. It doesn't always have to be serious trauma, right? But sometimes it can be something a teacher told you when you were in grade school, right? That marked you and affected you. So, and then what happens is we have events that happen, whether they're serious or not. And then other things happen and it builds and it builds. And I call that emotional scar tissue. And we have to heal that scar tissue so that we are less reactive, right? So that we remove the triggers so that we're not triggered. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do. I take people from victim to creator.
Oh, getting us into our essence. And you can do this online. People can contact you and they would do this with you over a Zoom call?
Yes, I even used to be just by phone, right? Before we had video. So because it's energy, you don't have to be right in front of the person. So just like you can coach through Zoom, I can do this through Zoom. Through video, I'm doing it currently on lives on TikTok. So it's amazing.
When I'm doing a coaching call with somebody, I'm watching them. I'm asking questions and I'm watching how they answer. And I'm picking up clues, sometimes in the silences and in the ways that they'll answer a question. And that gives me a lot of information, a lot of feedback. But also what I'll do is questions will pop up in my mind. Suspicions will pop up in my mind, ideas. And I follow my intuition and I use my intuition in my line of questioning. And for me, it feels very much like a tapping into someone's energy. When somebody is contacting you for some energy healing, how do you know you've tapped into their energy?
When I'm working with them?
Yeah.
Okay. I just do. I don't know how to say. I'm always tapped into people's energy. And I think that we actually do it way more than we think we do. I think that I think we are all sponges. We're all empathic. We all pick up on other people's energies. It's just that people don't realize that they're doing it. And just like we are always creating, even though we don't always realize what we're creating. So when I don't have to turn it on. So when I'm working with somebody, I just connect to them and it just flows. I don't really know how else to say it. I don't have a process or anything. It's just, and especially when I'm in it, when I'm working with you, I'm just tuned in and I there's no filter. I just, everything comes through.
It kind of feels, for me, it feels like a flow. Yes. And it feels like I said, the word intuition, and we use that word a lot in women, that word intuition. I just knew. And it can be hard for people to understand that people can tap into other people's energies. People can tap into someone's thoughts and emotions without even being in the same room as them. And the way I like to kind of tie it in so that it makes sense to them, it's their own coincidences. When I think about somebody that I care about and a minute later I get a text message or a phone call, which to me is the indication that you don't have to be in the same room in order to communicate. Tell us some of the things that you've helped people heal through. Is there like a story that stands out to you?
I have so many, I've had some amazing ones, even on these lives. The lives have been amazing, but
here's an example. I don't want to interrupt you, but I want to take that opportunity because you use the word lives. You've been doing this lately on your TikTok live streams, haven't you?
I have, and it's been amazing. And I've told you this, I watched you, not just, you know, I love who you are, and I love the way you present yourself. You're presenting yourself authentically. We have a similar outlook on life. I don't agree with everything you say, right? And I'm sure you wouldn't agree with everything I say, but the things that you say, they make sense. They're logical. They fit. Everything you say is cohesive, right? There's no contradictions, and it matches the way I live and the way I see life, right? And I love your strength and the way you communicate and the way you communicate that strength. Those are the things that attract me to you and your work and your lives. And so by watching you, and this is what I always say too, it's not just your stuff is not just about dating. It's about just the way you live and the way you carry yourself and the way you choose relationships, all kinds of relationships. And for me, watching you helped me solidify how I wanted to do my lives, right? And gave me that extra push. And then I just decided to do it. And the community on your lives has supported my lives now. So it's really wonderful. And I think our work intersects so well and, like, you know, goes together really, really well. So yeah, I've really enjoyed it. And I love being able to help people, and I have people who come back more than once, and we work on different pieces. So it's been amazing. And I just, you know, at the end of the evening, because I do them in the evening, and I'm just so blissed out, you know what I mean? There's nothing like it. Just, I know you feel the same way when you help somebody. There's nothing like it in the world, nothing like that feeling. But I mean, I have a lot of examples. So one of the ones that I like to talk about is, not in detail, but it's a good example that we can work on any range of trauma. I've had people try to convince me that their trauma is so serious, and it is serious, but there's no trauma that we can't unpack and heal. It's just about going at it in little piece by piece, and you heal that pain, you heal the memory, and then you keep going. And eventually the memory, what I've seen, because I've been doing this for 20 years, and what I've seen consistently is when we release a memory, when we heal it, the memory either dissipates, right? The person can't even really connect to it anymore. Mm-hmm. Or it's like a black and white movie that you have no emotional charge around. It's just something that happened. And when, I know I'm not actually giving you the example right now, but I want to say this. So when we release that, right? when we release the pain, we shift internally. So your perception of life is going to change, your perception of yourself, of the people around you. You all of a sudden have solutions, right? You focus on the solutions instead of the problems, because that's what emerges. So I always tell people on these lives, you're, as I was saying before, your inner being, right? Your inner spirit is at the core of you. So it's down here. And then we have all of this emotional scar tissue, all of this trauma sitting on top of it. And then what we're told is, oh, you're stuck with this layer and these layers, but now you've got to try to love yourself on top of it. Now you've got to try to do better. Now you've got to just manage your emotions. But that is not stable, right? It's like I was saying last night, it's like a Jenga tower. So, you know, let's solidify yourself by removing those layers of pain and get you back to that stable core. And
right.
So when we shift the pain, you go back to that. So you get a little bit more of self-love, you get a little bit more confidence, you get more peace, you get more of that sense of control, because we're removing those layers that have been blocking that solid foundation, right? That inner being. So one of my favorite personal memories is I was working with this man. He didn't really come to me. He was going to promote my work. We were going to do group sessions and stuff. And so in order for you to be able to promote me, I feel like you have to experience my work, right? So I said, what can I help you with? And he was a war vet, and he had PTSD, and he had trouble sleeping. He had a memory of being in a helicopter and giving a command that unalived many people. And we released the memory in not even an hour, released the memory. And after that, it was gone. And he was able to sleep. And I use primarily a modality called EFT or tapping or emotional freedom technique. You do? Oh, yes. Yeah, exactly. I blend that with some other tools and my intuitive guidance. And yeah, so using that, we can release any kind of memory. I've worked with sexual assault memories, kidnapping. One time a woman came to me. She had been, as a child, kidnapped in the Middle East by her father's family. That took two sessions because it was a prolonged memory. It was over months, and we were able to release all of that. All kinds of different things. All kinds of different things. I'm such a fan of this work. Like, this is a hill I can die on. Like, this works, and we do not have to suffer. We just don't have to suffer.
So aligned on that one, because what do I say all the time, right? When we make the right selection, we don't suffer other people's decisions, right? People who are making the wrong decisions. Somebody asked me today on my live stream, what if they're trying to change? And I said, you don't need to suffer their lies while they're trying to change. You don't need to suffer their irresponsibility while they're trying to change. You can simply pick the person who is honest and responsible. So I love that you said that, because it just made me feel so aligned with you, my love. Have you ever had people come back long after you've worked with them and said, by the way, just want to say, still feeling great?
Yeah, for sure. And then people will come back because they had so much success that they want to do it again, right? We're never done working on ourselves. We're never done. I mean, I've been working on myself for 20 years. I still work on myself every day. Because we live in the world, right? And so you can fine tune what you're focusing on, of course, and you can create better and better and better. But as long as we're living in the world, we're going to encounter that contrast, right? I'm a big fan of Abraham Hicks. And so when you have unpleasant things in your life, or you observe unpleasant things, it's information, it's contrast that can redirect you to what you enjoy and what you want to do and what you want to be and what you can see in your life. I think our world is a plethora, you know, a range of everything available. And it's up to each one of us to decide what we focus on, what we want to create, what we want to recreate, what we want to perpetuate, right? And everything always starts within yourself.
Yes, self-responsibility, right? We spend so much time saying, I'm miserable because my mom abused me. I could say that, or I could say, my mom abused me, and I no longer let people abuse me.
Yes, and you can say, my mom abused me. I'm going to heal that pain and not let it affect me anymore, right? Yeah, 100%.
So I'm going to hit you with a doozy here. This is going to be a really deep little question. What would you say to people who say, I don't have a stable core because a stable core isn't even in my gene code? I was born of a mom who was born of a mom who was born of a mom that were all unstable. What would you say to that?
I would say, let's work on healing your pain, right? So let's find those things in your childhood, in your life that cause pain within you, that make you feel like you're unstable. First of all, there's that. Then there's the belief that you're unstable, right? So that's a false belief. It's like people saying that, well, I'm not in control of my life. Of course you're in control of your life. You just don't realize that you're in control of your life. Are you stuck or do you feel stuck, right? So it's all about your mindset. It's about how you're seeing yourself and how you're seeing your life. I actually have a client currently who that's been one of his things, is not feeling like he has that stability, right? So you have to go look at the reason why you feel that way, heal that, and then you will shift into that natural stability. Because again, your inner being is very stable. Your inner being is in control. So we find, and that's where I come in, right? Asking the right questions, just like you do in your work. It's about asking the right questions, using your intuition to ask the right questions. So unearth the root of that, heal it and change it. It will change when you heal it. And then again, like I was saying before, you tap back in, like that stuff emerges, right? One of the visuals I often use is that it's like having a life, like your life jacket, right? In a pool of water, it floats to the top. But if you bury it, if you put a bunch of rocks on top of it, it's going to sink to the bottom. But as we pull the rocks off, the life jacket, you know, resurfaces. Now, some people will just go to Walmart and buy another life jacket. That's not what I would do. I don't want somebody else's life jacket. I want my own. So I'm going to take the rocks off of it so I can float back up to the surface.
I love that. If I was a fly on the wall, watching you with a client for the duration of a session, what would I witness?
You can see it on the live. I have to say that. I think that you would witness the client. You would witness the person I'm working with evolve and emerge from their pain. And you can see, and that's why I love doing group sessions and I love doing it publicly, because people can see the person going from despair, sadness, grief, pain to like peace and feeling uplifted and positive, you know, that there's a solution, that oh, it doesn't feel like that anymore. Oh, wait a minute. I do deserve better. Oh, you know, you can see it and you can hear the release, the clarity, the shift. It's very obvious. And sometimes I've had situations where, so sometimes the release, the healing is so profound, like the shift is so dramatic, that people don't even remember how they felt 10, 15, 20 minutes ago. That's how deep the shift is. And I have to remind them, not to bring it back in, because I've had people say, oh yeah, I've been working on that in therapy for 10 years, but you were sobbing about it 15 minutes ago, right? Mm-hmm. But so it's like almost so mind-boggling that this work works so well, so deeply, so profoundly, so quickly that they can't even fathom it. So I have to remind them. And then I have other people witnessing it saying, no, you just shifted, right? Yeah.
I love that you kind of, sort of brought up how people can spend 10 years of therapy, but you got to have a good therapist. And I think a good therapist actually does energy work. In my mind, a good therapist has you focusing on your sensations and your thoughts and your energy, meditation, calming your energy, your brain. When I say energy, I'm talking about the states of your brain waves. When you sit in front of a computer monitor and you have the electrodes on your head and you're looking at the wavy lines on the screen, there's your energy right there. The state of your brain waves. Are you in an anxious, agitated brainwave state? Or are you in a calm brainwave state? Our brainwaves are deeply affecting us. So, what would you say to somebody who's doubtful that this could ever work for them? Because, listen, I've been in therapy. Like, I've got a therapist. I go talk about this once a week. Like, this is woo-woo.
I would say, well, when people say I've tried everything, I say you haven't tried everything if you haven't worked with me. So, it's not going to hurt. And so if you are committed to really changing something, then you will try everything. That's how I feel.
Exactly why I don't give refunds on coaching sessions. I want the people who buy a session to be sure. Here's the thing, I did give refunds when I first started my business, and I've given out two refunds. And after two, I said, I'm not doing this a third time. Because what those two people did is use me because they ran out of people to listen to them. And I said, I'm not doing this anymore. If you're just looking for somebody to vent to because all of your friends are saying, I'm tired of hearing you complain about the decisions you're making, I'm not going to pay for that with my time. If you're ready to change, you pay the money for my time and I help you change. Do you give homework when you finish a session with people? What would be the
I
homework?
do. I even give homework in the live. Like if you want to come back, this will help you. So I have a pretty simple model for my sessions. I used to offer packages and people would use their sessions whenever they wanted. That didn't work for me. I'll pull it even back. I used to do angel readings, right? Like kind of like psychic readings, but to me, angel readings are a little bit different. They're more sort of positive, empowering, and I get information on people's like the future's not set in stone, so it's potentials. I used to, so if you do this is the potential, or if you want this potential, do this work to move that way. That's the kind of information I used to get. I stopped doing that. Now it just gets integrated into my work, right? But I stopped doing readings purely because you get people who are just shopping for psychics, who just want information. They're not doing the work. They're not changing anything. And most of the time, you're giving them information they already know, right? You're just validating or not what they already think. It just wasn't fulfilling to me. So in this work, I offer single sessions for people who want to try the work, right? And then I say, if you want to keep going, then we just roll into a package. So my favorite setup is 5 sessions over 5 weeks. And I came to that because I realized that consistency, right? So it's just like in your lives, right? The more often you come, even today, people were saying, that consistency and hearing the same thing over and over again, it just, you get it, right? And it helps you maintain that your inner strength, right? So it's the same thing, that consistency and the commitment that a person is making to showing up for themselves once a week, it's a big part of the work. And then because we're having that consistency, I can give them homework and I can support them in using the tools on themselves. So the clients that I have that use the tools on themselves between sessions, they get way more out of the work, right, than the ones who just depend on their sessions with me. I don't want people to be dependent on me. I want to empower them to do the work with themselves. Come to me when you have something more difficult. Like, let's go through the hard stuff. Let me make the connections you can't make by yourself. But on a daily basis, the little intrusive thoughts, the feelings, you can work on them yourself. And I will give people homework, like make a list of the things that make you feel like you're afraid of abandonment. What were the events in your life where you felt abandoned? So make a list of that so that we can work on them, right? Or try to work on them yourself this way. So yeah, I'm a big fan of homework. I don't force myself to give homework, but I do it regularly just because that's what comes up.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
I did an interview once with Dr. G. He is a university professor. He teaches psychotherapy. And he was on TikTok for a while, and him and I crossed paths, and I had him come and do an interview with me. And I said, "Do you have any questions for me?" And he said, "How do you do it? Because I know that this is very difficult for people to deal with other people and not carry that. So how do you do it?" So my question to you, Diane, is, do you take on any of the emotions? And if you do, how do you deal with that? Or if you don't, how do you not take that on?
I think that I learned through different experiences. So one of the experiences I had that built me up for this, I think, is when I was in university. So I studied criminology in university
Nice.
and I worked in a victim center. So it was a in the province of Quebec, they had these, I don't know if they still have them, but it's a center for an advocacy center for victims of crime. And I volunteered there for over a school year in university. And I had to learn there to not take on people's problems because I heard about horrifying things every day.
Right.
And then we would go for lunch and just joke and enjoy each other, enjoy our time. So I had to learn to separate that. That is a marking experience in my life. I think that that was a step in that. And then also learning, like I started my spiritual journey before the internet, right? So I was reading books. I was trying to understand what I was experiencing. And then when I would turn 30 is when I learned Reiki. I became a Reiki master. And in Reiki, you learn that you don't take on people's stuff, right? You're not the healer. And you're not absorbing their energy. You are literally a channel. You're just a conduit. You're just connecting that person to, you're reconnecting them to universal source energy, right? I will allow that to come through me. I feel that coming through me. When I work with people, I'm also releasing as they're releasing. I will pick up their feeling, right? That's information for me, but I don't take it on. I'll even pick up physical pain, but again, I don't take it on because it's not mine. You know, when you were talking earlier about picking up other people's pain, right? I remember one time going to a book reading. I went by myself. I was feeling fine. As soon as I sat down, I started getting a headache. And I thought, that's not mine. That's not mine. So somebody around here has a headache and I'm just picking it up. So I used my tools and I cleared it, right? So it's just about knowing it's not yours and not taking it on. It's again about being in your power. I'm not a victim. I'm not a victim to your energy. I'm not a victim to your feelings. I just receive it, it's information, and then that's it.
I love how you described yourself as a conduit, because it kind of created an image in my head that helped me understand myself a little bit better. And what I saw is like myself and another person, but then the other person stays where they are, but I take a step to the side, and then it's an energy that comes, almost like it comes out of my mouth, but it doesn't go into my body. It just bypasses my body. So I'm not picking up the person's energy, because in a way, it's almost not me that's interacting with them. It's me sort of channeling the information that they need to get. And I mean, the other part of me that is interacting is my brain. So my assessing and my logic, in addition to the messages that come, the information that comes. So I like that. Thank you for that. You talked about tools for not carrying that energy. What are tools that you exercise?
So the tapping, right? is one of them. So, and I can do that in my mind. Again, it doesn't, you know, we physically tap. I could do it physically on you. You can do it on yourself. I can pretend I'm doing it. It's, again, it's all energy, right? Just like Reiki, you can send healing at a distance. So I use my tools. And another really good tool that's from a different modality that the modality itself can be problematic, but I don't believe in, you know, with the expression, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. So a really, really good tool for shifting a belief. So I'm a big fan of using the tapping for memories, for emotions, like painful emotions. But I find myself using this tool that I'll tell you about when it's a false belief, right? Like a belief would be, so this came up recently in a session. If I had somebody who had lost a friend who committed suicide, right? And one of the beliefs that she was stuck with that was causing all of this pain was, if I had said something, she wouldn't have killed herself. Which is not necessarily true, right?
No.
So I had her do this. So what I do, and then I combine both tools, just make everything more powerful. Why not, right? So we tap on the side of the hand, and then you say, interesting point of view. I have this point of view. And then you repeat that like at least 5 times, right? 3 to 5 times, usually 5 is the good. And you're just like, interesting point of view. I have this point of view. And you just say it when you're focused on that energy of that dynamic or the belief, and it just shifts it. I don't know how, but basically what you're doing is you're addressing the fact that this is just a belief. It's just a point of view, and it's almost like it takes the reality away from it, if that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a question about tapping. And this, it kind of just hit me now, and I sort of want to explore this with you. So we know about cutting, which is, you know, people will hurt themselves physically. Yeah. And for me, when I was 19 in an abusive relationship and in so much pain that just was never stopping, because from abusive mom to abusive boyfriend, and I was in a lot of pain, and I would take my nails and rake it down my forearm. And, you know, I'm 52 now, do the math. So that was a long time ago. There weren't conversations about cutting back then. But what I was doing was bringing the pain outward to make it feel more physical, to alleviate it inside of me, from the inside to the outside.
To take control of your life, to be in control of the pain.
And
right?
Yeah. But just get it from the inside to the outside.
Yeah.
And I wonder right now, as we're talking about tapping, if tapping is a positive form of that, like to create a physical sensation to help exteriorize the interior emotions. What is your take on that?
I mean, that might be a part of it, but it really is an energy thing. So tapping is also considered to be like, it's like acupuncture without the needles. So when you're tapping on these different parts, right, you're actually tapping on the meridians, on the energy system. And so you're releasing blockages in the energy system. So it's the same thing again with Reiki. It's a great comparison. With Reiki, you are unblocking blockages in the energy system. With EFT, what they explain is that, like in a nutshell, it's that when you tune into a negative memory, you get a disruption in your energy system, like it's, and then you get the negative feeling. So you tune into the issue, you do the tapping on the energy system. And when you're tapping on these points, what you're doing is you're accessing all of the meridians. So you don't have to know what each meridian means for, you know, like all of the connections that an acupuncturist would do. So you're tapping on the different points. You are hitting all of the meridians to clear the blockage that is connected to the memory, and that then releases the negative emotion. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes.
How often do you have people crying on sessions with you?
Almost always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Yeah. I used to say I'm the Barbara Walters. I'm like Barbara Walters. I make people cry.
Except you probably ask
But
better questions than what kind of tree would you be?
it is such a natural though. It's a beautiful thing. It's lovely to, it's important to cry. And sometimes, and often I, people access memories that they didn't know they had, right? Just naturally, because when we start working on an issue and then something unlocks, right? And then it's like, oh, I remember this, and this was part of it. So now, okay, so I always follow that path, right? I follow the thread. So then let's heal that. Like, we are so intelligent. Anybody who watches me or works with me will tell you, I do not accept I don't know as an answer,
Nice.
because you have the answer inside of you. It's just locked up, or you don't want to acknowledge it. Just, you can get there,
I love this. Diana, people want to work with you. Where can they find you?
My website is soulrestoration.ca, and people can email me at diane@soulrestoration.ca. I'm on TikTok. I think it's Diane Lantier 111.
Okay.
And I'm on Facebook, and don't use Instagram very much, but yeah, I'm around.
Are there any final points you want to make before we wrap up today?
I would love to tell you about something, actually.
Okay.
Okay, so first of all, I have a book called On Loneliness.
Okay.
It's hard to see the cover. So this is, and I loved seeing your print on the wall the other day on the life of your cover, because I own the print. I'm telling you and I have so many similarities. Like, it's incredible. But so the cover of this book, I published, self-published this in 2005. It is a channeled book of messages. So the book is called On Loneliness: Angelic Wisdom to Comfort and Inspire. And the whole point of this book is that the key to not being lonely is to being connected to yourself, right? When you are truly connected to yourself, you're not lonely, because you're connected, right? And so this is all about self-love, and that's what this is. And people can read it from front to back, or they can use it like a deck of cards and just flip to a page and read the message, because they're all short messages. For a year at lunchtime during my work, I would channel, and then I put them all together and I self-published this book. And when I was looking for the cover, my Reiki teacher actually had this beautiful painting on her wall, and I said, "Where did you get this?" And she said, "It's a soul painting." Pointed me to the person in my area who had painted it, and I communicated with her, and I had seen this on her website, and I said, "I love this, but would you read my book? And if you would like to paint something for the book, that would be great too." And after she read the material, she said, "Actually, I think this is perfect." So I bought the painting. It's in my living room, and I bought the right, she sold me the right to use it as my cover. And the wonderful thing about this, the painting, I didn't even know, is called Faithful Companion. So it just all resonates, and I love how the light is coming in. And so this is my first book. The second book that I'm working on now, slowly but surely, I feel like I'm still always getting material for it, is on a model I developed a few years ago, actually at the beginning of 2000 to 2020, before the pandemic. And so it's a model with a set of five power archetypes. I call them the power archetypes. Do I have time to describe that to you a little bit?
Go for it, yeah.
Okay, cool. So, like I said, and I love it. So again, I love that you call yourself the Sherpa, because I've used that as well, right? Because the model that I have, the picture, the image that I have, is a mountain. And the bottom half, or the first three archetypes, are at the bottom, right? So we start at the bottom of the mountain and we climb up. And the first three are part of a victim consciousness. And the other two archetypes are creator consciousness, right? A consciousness of abundance consciousness. And so as you climb higher on the mountain, you can look down and see how far you've come, right? As you climb higher to the peak, you can see the other mountains and the other peaks and say, oh, well, I've climbed this one, now I can climb that one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when we slide down the mountain, once you've been up once, if you slip down, you can pick yourself back up and go back because you've already had that success. I know I can do this again, right? Oh, I've conquered this mountain, I can conquer another one. Like, what else can I do, right? So that's the visual from my model. But basically, so I'll just run through them really, really quickly, because when I've done this in a group session or even in individual sessions, people can really see where they stand in terms of their own sense of power, right? So these are descriptions of states of empowerment, let's say. So it's how empowered you feel. So again, we are always in control and we are always creating and we always have our power, but we feel disempowered. We feel out of control, right? We give our power away. So these five states describe the level of disempowerment and empowerment. So the first archetype is called the realist. And the realist is when somebody has no sense of self, where they don't feel like they can change anything. They can't change anything internally, and they can't change anything externally, right? So you're just stuck with the hand you were dealt with. You made choices, you have to deal with the consequences, you just can't change anything. You're stuck with life is like it is what it is, right? It is what it is one of my least favorite expressions. It is so disempowered. And I use it sometimes, but when I use it, it's because I know I'm making the choice not to change anything about that. That's the only time I'll use it, right?
Right.
You know, you feel hopeless, you feel out of control. Like these are all states of being the realist. And these are not archetypes in the sense that this is who you are your whole life or this is who you are completely in your life. You can be one archetype in one area and a different archetype in another area. You might feel very empowered in one aspect of your life or on one issue, but feel completely disempowered in another one, right? So that's why with the mountain, you know, the more empowered you are on the more issues you're empowered, the more you can look at other parts of your life and be like, well, how come I don't feel that way about this? So let me look at that and bring myself back up in this part as well, right? The second one is the warrior. And that's when now people are deciding, well, maybe I can have some impact in the external world, right? So people will find jobs where they can contribute, right? Like with animals or people or keyboard warriors, right? They're trying to do better. They're trying to impact. They're trying to make changes. But it's still a disempowered state because you are still buying that the external world is a set real world that can't be changed. But I'm going to try to make some impact within it, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the third archetype is the conqueror. So now we're going back inwards. Now I've realized, well, I can't change the world. The world isn't going to change, right? Oh, and in that warrior state too is when people feel like the rest of the world has to change, right? I can't change, so you have to change. So the government has to change in order for my income to be different or my, you know, my finances to be different, or he has to change for the relationship to be better, right? It's always making other people, the external world needs to change for my life to be better. So then when we move into the conqueror archetype, now I understand that I have to change, right? So I have to fix my triggers. I have to work on my emotions, my reactions to the world that's not changing. So that's when, you know, people discover their spirituality. When people, you know, like meditation and yoga and self-care and learning about your needs and all of that stuff falls into that conqueror archetype. I'm going to conquer myself. I'm going to go inward and change what I can change. It is a great step forward, but it's still victim consciousness in the sense that I still feel like the only thing I can do is the inside, that I don't have power externally. So, but the more you do that, right, I'm sure you've seen this, Chantal. The more you work on yourself, the more your external world changes, right?
Yes.
The more you do it, the more you realize, wait a minute, but maybe I can start doing it on purpose. I can start changing my inner world in order to change my external world, my outer world. And that becomes the fourth archetype, which is the alchemist. So when you're the alchemist, that's when you start taking responsibility for your experiences. Now you're 100% responsible for your inner world and your outer world. Now you start working on your inner self in order to create a better external world for yourself, right? You're doing it consciously now. So now you're in that creator mode. Now you're in the abundance consciousness, right? And then the fifth one, which is the peak of the mountain, which is the bonus level, I call it. Because I think if you're in alchemist mode most of the time, you're doing really, really well, right? The peak one, the bonus one, is what I call the designer. Because now instead of tweaking and changing, you're literally creating out of thin air the things that you'd like to see in your life. You're stepping it up even more. So sometimes you don't even have a reference point, right? That trip you'd like to take that just is completely out of your experience and what you think you're able to do, like creating those dreams and those things that other people aren't realistic. That's when you're in designer mode.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just wanted to go over that because this is my baby and I'm just so passionate about empowering people and having people see like just how much power they have and control they have over their own lives and their experiences.
Accountability.
Yes.
It's what we talk about all the time.
Yes.
Accountability, protecting our environment, taking responsibility for our own thoughts, emotions, and behaviors. And from that place of empowerment and self-knowledge, we can ask ourselves, what do I want? And then from there, we can create what it is that we want for ourselves.
Yeah. And I grew up, in a loving family, but because of our dynamic, I didn't grow up knowing my own needs and validating my own needs and wants. I've had to do that as an adult. I've had to realize that I didn't really know what my needs and wants were. And I think a lot of people do that. I think probably a lot of women do that. And that's why we allow relationships that aren't healthy for us, right? That's why we're fixers. That's why we're builder-uppers, because we're not in tune with our own needs and desires and wants, and when we are, we don't validate them, and we look to other people. There you go. That's that second archetype. We look to other people to validate our needs and wants. And if that other person in that in the relationship we're in, or the person we're talking to, isn't doing it, then we feel worthless because that external person isn't validating my inner world. You have to do it for yourself first, right?
Yeah, I love this, Diane. Thank you so much. I hope my people who are listening come and find you and come do some wonderful work with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I send people to you all the time too.
Yeah. Thank you, my love. I will see you again on my live streams.
I will. Thank you.